Chapter 4, Shuffle Off to Buffalo. When I was 13, my world changed drastically. I finished 7th grade and was told my parents were going to open a women's boutique dress shop in Buffalo. I had an uncle there and old friends of mom and dad's from when he worked in New York City. However, they needed to sell the house and decided to keep my brother with them when it looked like they wouldn't be able to move to Buffalo before school started. So, I was brought to Aunt Millie and Uncle Al's, and Christine was farmed out to Uncle Ted and Aunt Eleanor. They were both very brave families to take us in, if only for a few months. Aunt Millie and Uncle Al had never had kids, so they adopted Michael, who was about a year old, a beautiful child but demanding as all young children are, and who had parents who spent every waking minute looking after him. Uncle Ted and Aunt Eleanor had two little girls, and they lived down the road from Aunt Millie and Uncle Al. Even so, my sister and I didn't see much of each other. I was destined to go to the combined junior and senior high school about a mile away, while my sister was going to the elementary school, not on the same campus. Big culture shock for me. I spoke with a heavy southern accent and had no idea what the girls in high school wore. My first day of school, I wanted to fall through the floor when I showed up in a flowery cotton dress with hair tightly curled, wearing brown Oxford shoes and cotton socks. Aunt Millie and I had gone shopping, and she had picked out the dress and shoes for me. But the girls at that school wore skirts and blouses with saddle shoes or loafers, and even the girls in 8th grade like me wore a little makeup. There were two sisters a couple of houses away who went to the high school, and the next day I caught up with them and walked with them to school. They tolerated me, did not direct any conversation to me, and I knew I was not going to be in their circle of friends. So, what positive things happened in my world before my parents finally arrived the day before Christmas? I learned that most of the girls knitted their own socks, so I got Aunt Millie to show me how to knit and began a lifelong love of the craft. My first pair of socks were awful, but I wore them anyway. Since I could not seem to make friends with any of the girls, I hung around with the high school boys who played a sort of football in the streets. I was usually put on a team where I did not have to pass the ball and had fun being a tomboy with them. I also kept my knitting in my back pocket, and when there was not any footballing going on at my end of the street, I would take it out and knit for a few minutes. Thus, started the habit of having my knitting with me most of the time, good for long waits in doctor's offices, government offices, or in the car waiting for the drawbridge to come down. Aunt Millie had graduated from college with a degree in home economics, so she was an excellent cook, and she loved to do canning every summer. Two of her most memorable condiments are chili sauce, not salsa, and corn relish. I have made both, and though they are a lot of work, it certainly is worth the effort when you taste the results. There is no better way to top a meatloaf than with several spoonfuls of chili sauce on it before baking. Aunt Millie's Chili Sauce. Ingredients: 1/2 bushel of tomatoes, peeled, 18 large onions, 6 hot peppers, 12 green or bell peppers, 1 bunch of celery, 1 sea salt, 2 teaspoons ground black pepper, 1½ teaspoon garlic salt, 1 teaspoon cayenne pepper, 3 pounds sugar, 7 sea vinegar. Directions: chop all the vegetables and put together with all the spices and vinegar. After the mixture has cooked for 2 hours, add the sugar. Total cooking time is 3 to 4 hours. Put into sterilized canning jars. Yield is about 24 quarts. I would use pint jars and give them away as Christmas presents. Hint: to peel tomatoes, have a pan of boiling water on the stove. Skewer a tomato on a meat carving fork and put it into the water for 15 to 30 seconds. This loosens the skin, and it should slip right off if you peel it under running cold water. Aunt Millie's Corn Relish. Ingredients: 9c fresh corn, about 18 ears, removed from cobs, 3c chopped cabbage, 3c chopped celery, about 2 stalks, 2c chopped hot peppers, about 6 1c chopped bell pepper, about 3 3c chopped onions, 10 to 12 3c chopped unpeeled cucumbers, 2 to 3 half c sugar, 1 quarter c salt, 1 tablespoon dry mustard, 1 tablespoon turmeric, 1 tablespoon celery seed, 1c honey, 1c water, 3c cider vinegar. Directions: mix vegetables and remaining ingredients in order given, heat to boiling and cook slowly for 15 minutes. Seal in hot sterilized pint jars. This is marvelous on pork chops or even a turkey sandwich. Mom and Dad had visited a few times from Atlanta and had bought a house just 2 blocks from Aunt Millie and Uncle Al. They had all the furniture delivered 2 days before Christmas, and the first thing in the new house was the Christmas tree. It was wonderful to have our family all together for Christmas, and of course, we had a big feast with Uncle Al, Aunt Millie, Uncle Ted and Aunt Eleanor and all the kids. That was about all the similarity we had with our daily routine with Atlanta. Mom and Dad went to the shop every day, so I learned to make dinner as soon as I got home from school. The shop didn't close until 6 p.m. so when Mom and Dad got home, we were all hungry. We all ate together and had a real family dinner, something which I think many families don't have now. Mom insisted for every dinner, the dining room table had to be covered in a cotton tablecloth, candles, a live plant, sometimes a tired African violet, and cloth napkins. Good table manners were very important to Mom, and she said that eating in the dining room made it easier to remember all the do's and don'ts of table manners. One of the meals we had on a regular basis was baked fish. Mom had a Scottish-British approach to food, so sometimes it was bland. I began to get creative and added seasoning and spices which everyone seemed to enjoy. A favorite of ours was baked mackerel or salmon. Now for some people mackerel is chum or bait used on a hook to catch other fish, but we like the strong taste of it. Baked mackerel or salmon ingredients: 2 pounds of mackerel or salmon, 2c milk for mackerel, 1 tablespoon oregano, pepper and salt to taste. Directions: 350 degree oven, fish in large pan, uncovered, for 45 minutes. Salmon ingredients: juice of 3 lemons, 3 terabytes capers, 2 twigs of rosemary. Directions: 350 degree oven, fish in large pan, uncovered for 30 minutes. This was usually served with boiled or mashed potatoes and green beans. A salad, with lettuce, tomatoes, sometimes bell peppers and or radishes, oil, and vinegar dressing, came as the second course. My dad did not like garlic or onions, so I didn't know much about how to use garlic until I had my own kitchen. He said onions were okay if they were cooked. My folks are from NYC and salad is always eaten after the entree, so that is when we ate ours. Dessert was usually jello, made the night before, junket, do they even make that anymore? Or pudding. In the summertime we might have fruit pie if Mom made one on Sunday. Here is a good place for me to put my mom's cherry pie recipe. We had 2 red, sour, cherries trees in our yard. When the cherries were ripe, our job was to pick the cherries and then pit them for Mom to freeze them. I remember distinctly how shriveled my hands got from pitting the cherries. I would venture to say we froze 30 or 40 pints of cherries every summer. Of course, we had a lot of cherry pie during that time, and Mom gave away many pints of cherries to friends and family. Mom's cherry pie filling: 2 to 3 c of fresh red, sour cherries, 1 and a half c sugar, 3 t cornstarch, dash of mace, dash of cinnamon, dash of salt. Directions: mix all ingredients and set aside to blend well, while making the crust. Crust: Here's where you can cheat. Use preformed frozen pie crust, thawed and patted into an 8 inches or 9 inches pan, or you can use pie crust mix. From scratch crust, ingredients. 3 c sifted flour. 3 quarters c lard, don't use shortening, it's not the same. 1 teaspoon salt. Ice cold water, usually about 5 or 6 tablespoons. Directions. Break the lard into small pieces in the flour, which already has the salt mixed in. I usually use my clean hands to do it, but a wire whisk or a couple of table knives crisscrossing the mixture also work. Once the flour is mixed with the lard into tiny pieces, sprinkle 2 or 3 tablespoons of ice water into the mixture. Mix with a fork. Keep adding ice water 1 terabit at a time until the mixture adheres together in a crumbly ball. Now here's mom's secret about the best pie crust you can make. Generously coat the rolling surface with flour and use a wooden rolling pin, if possible. Coat the rolling pin and your hands with flour. Divide the dough into 2 balls. Aim for rolling the dough into a circle slightly larger than the pie pan. I have never attained a perfect circle and neither did mom, but she would lift the rolled out dough in the pie pan and then cut off the overhang dough and patch the missing dough on the pie pan and along the edges. Her secret to melt in your mouth pie crust was to never roll the dough out more than once. She said it makes it tough. So, people don't care about patched pie crust, just how good it tastes. The top crust should be folded in half and 3 small slits put in it. Pile the cherry mixture into the pie crust and dot with butter, maybe 3 or 4 tablespoons. Put the top crust on and patch as necessary until the whole pie pan is covered. Then using a fork, mash down the edges all the way around, or if you have enough dough on the edges, pinch the edges, it makes a nice fancy edge. Bake in a preheated oven 425 degrees for about 10 minutes and then in a 350 degree oven for another 30 minutes or when you see the crust is nice and evenly brown. Be sure to put the pie on a cookie sheet before you put it in the oven, the juice from the cherries is guaranteed to spill over. Cherry pie is one of those wonderful treats that's good hot with some ice cream. Room temperature with more ice cream or whipped cream or served in a bowl with heavy cream, and it's also good for breakfast right out of the refrigerator. Across the street from Aunt Millie and Uncle Al lived a wonderful older couple. She was a cheery soul originally from Nova Scotia, so when we were invited to their house for dinner, we learned about Canadian food. The first time we went there, you could smell what was cooking before you even got in the house. Whatever it was divine. It was her version of spare ribs and sauerkraut. Probably most Yankees know about this dish, but we didn't. When we were Yankees, we were influenced by the Lebanese and Scottish cooking, not the Canadian. Dorothy Morgan's spare ribs and sauerkraut ingredients. In a large roasting pan, like for a turkey. 2-3 racks of pork spare ribs, regular or baby back. 6-9 medium-size white potatoes scrubbed with the skin still on. 2-3 large cans or jars of sauerkraut. Directions: place the potatoes on the bottom, then place ribs on top of the potatoes and then add the sauerkraut, being sure to spread it over the ribs completely. Bake covered in a 325 degree oven for at least 1.5 hours. Serve 1 or 2 potatoes and a generous portion of sauerkraut, along with several ribs per person. Don't be surprised if most people come back for seconds. This is as good a place as any to tell you about my bad girl behavior. My mom needed help in the store on Saturdays, money was tight, so mom's solution was to dress me up. She fit me with a padded bra, stockings, high heels, makeup and a pageboy hairstyle. She told everyone I was in college and only worked on Saturdays at the store. I've never been shy my entire life, so selling was natural for me. I was a good salesperson and have been blessed with good fashion sense, which was augmented by mom and dad's experiences. Dad even took me to New York occasionally on a buying trip. My taste was respected, and the people we all met, the wholesalers, all assumed I was a college student. What happened before long was my ability to masquerade as older encouraged me to sneak out of the house and go to the local pub, Brunner's Tavern, a favorite of University of Buffalo students. In those days, an 18-year-old could legally drink 3.2 beer, and Brunner's would be packed with students on Friday and Saturday nights. Mom and Dad would go to bed early on Saturday night, after an exhausting week at the shop. After I was sure they were asleep, I would get dressed up, put on makeup, and take the bus to Brunner's. I started hanging out with the college kids who all thought I was a fellow student. I was never asked for ID, I was 15 years old. The bars closed at 2 a.m. and most times I would take the last bus going home. Sometimes I would miss it and I would hitch a ride with a very drunk student. Never thinking about how unsafe it was. 9 out of 10 times when I got home, I would be facing either my mom or dad, asking me where I had been. All they had to do was smell my breath and they knew. I was usually put on restriction for 2 weeks. That meant not going to the movies or parties or even going shopping. I got used to breaking the rules, always paying the price, and doing it again when I had the chance. In school, my grades were above average but not genius. My mother would look at my report card, see 4 A's and a B, sigh heavily and say, "Well, no one could say anything about your report card if you tried your very best." The implication to me was I was not really trying. Years later, I found out most people are primarily right-brained, arts, music, dance, literature, or left-brained, math, science, technical pursuits. The B I had was always in math. I worked hard, had a tutor at school, and never had a higher grade than a B. Of course, what I did not know at the time was my mom's background of rarely getting compliments as she grew up. Taciturn parents who thought praise would spoil her, naturally was passed on to her child-rearing. Because I was doing many adult things long before I should have, of course, I discovered sex. I thought it was great and never missed an opportunity for more. I tried my best to save my reputation, but it wasn't long before many of the boys would approach me. Thank goodness, I was careful, although the consequences of casual sex were never discussed. In health science class, the reproduction of the species was presented in very clinical terms. The boys were separated from the girls for these classes, I think a week. It never occurred to me that I could get pregnant or end up with a serious sexually transmitted disease. I had no one I could talk to about this new discovery. I had no girlfriends, and certainly could not talk to my mom or dad about it. My Uncle Teddy was a doctor, and I guess I could have trusted him, but was certain if I told him about my activity, he would tell Dad. In his library, Uncle Teddy had a large volume on sexuality, the Kinsey Reports. Every time I babysat my cousins, I would take out that book and read about weird sex. Well, I thought it was weird, and the sexual dos and don'ts of many cultures. In between my freshman and sophomore year in college, I had a summer job as a waitress. I met Carl, the son of one of Mom's shop customers. He and I worked at Howard Johnson's. He asked me out on a date and did not make any advances toward me. Wow. It had years since I just went out on a date, like dinner or movies. And best of all, my folks approved of him, because he was from a respected family. He was a nice young man, handsome and had a good sense of humor, my real weakness. I went back to college only half-heartedly and dropped out midway through the first semester. I went to work in the shop every day, and Carl, who was attending Cornell University School of Hotel Management, took me down for fraternity parties on weekends. He always remained the gentleman and never made sexual advances to me. It never seemed unusual, that was his normal behavior. He dropped out of college and started working for a commercial kitchen at an industrial plant. I saw him more often, and at Christmas, he asked me to marry him with a pearl ring set in gold. It was not what I wanted, but Mom and Dad thought it was wonderful. Only hitch was, the family was Catholic. So, I took the pre-Cana classes, classes for non-Catholics who are preparing to marry Catholics. All the young men and women in the class were happy and eager to be baptized into the faith. I had a long talk with the priest after the last class before baptism. I wanted to know what was next. He informed me about the baptism, and when I told him I wasn't sure, he told me I had to take it on faith. I stopped learning about the faith. Carl and I were married in the Catholic Church in July. On our honeymoon in Canada, my new husband told me he didn't see what the big deal about sex was. This is a direct quote: 3 or 4 times a year should be sufficient for anyone. Me, with my hormones raging, had just married someone with a low sex drive. It's a miracle that we had 2 boys 20 months apart. I did my best to observe special holidays and no meat on Friday. I didn't think about church, but I realized the boys should be exposed to religion. Carl had not gone to church after we were married until I started going to the Episcopal Church. He saw it as a challenge to his faith. I was shocked. I had told him I wanted the boys to go to Sunday school when they were old enough, and he flatly refused to agree, saying, "You signed a paper pledging to bring up the children as Catholics." Thus, the beginning of the end of our short marriage. I hung in there but joined a women's bowling league to have some fun and occasional sex with a stranger. It was not satisfying, but better than none. I retained a loving relationship with all his brothers and sisters and his folks. They lived on the other side of Buffalo in a German section of town. I met many of the family friends, and several of them were excellent cooks. His cute mom was a terrible cook, and the kids all said her favorite was burn and serve rolls. I had developed an interest in learning how to can. So, a neighbor, Mame Blount, shared her recipe for dill pickles with me. Mame Blount's dill pickles ingredients and directions: 4 or 5 cucumbers, 1 hot pepper, usually red, 1/2 teaspoon alum, head of fresh dill. Put all the above in a sterilized quart jar. Meanwhile, on the stove, put together 1 gallon of white vinegar, 3 qtrs of water, 2 c of non-iodized salt, handful of pickling spices. Bring mixture to a boil, then pour on top of ingredients in the jar and seal. Season these pickles until at least Thanksgiving. These pickles are usually canned at the height of the growing season for cucumbers, about July or August. Seems like a lot of work for dill pickles, but they sure don't taste like any you can buy off the shelf in a grocery store. Okay, one more canning recipe, again from Aunt Millie. Bread and butter pickles. Ingredients and directions: 1 quart cocktail or pickling cucumbers, unpeeled and sliced thin. 6 small onions, or pearl onions, sliced thin. 2 small bell peppers, sliced very thin. Soak the above ingredients in brine for 1 hour. Brine. 1/2 c salt. 1 qt water. 1/2 a teaspoon turmeric. Freshen pickles, run under cold water until cucumbers are not too salty. Add 1 c vinegar. 1 c sugar. 1 teaspoon celery seed. 1/2 a teaspoon cayenne pepper. 1 teaspoon mustard seed. 1/2 a teaspoon cinnamon. 1 teaspoon turmeric. Boil entire mixture and vegetables for 2 minutes. Pack into sterilized pint jars. Be sure to leave about 3/4 of an inch space at top of each jar. My husband was in the food service industry. My cooking was ordinary when I got married, so I was intimidated to try anything new for fear of food critic criticism from him. But there were 2 things I could make well: spaghetti sauce and mayonnaise. Mom always contended that homemade mayonnaise could never be equaled in a store-bought brand, and I agree with her. I could not fry an egg or bake a cake, but I excelled at homemade mayonnaise. Mom's homemade mayonnaise ingredients. 2 egg yolks, save the whites for later to add to a cake recipe. 1 teaspoon dry mustard. 1 teaspoon salt. 1 sea salad oil. 1 terabit boiling water. 1 tablespoon lemon juice. 1 tablespoon vinegar. Directions: mix these ingredients with an electric mixture. Here it's a little tricky. Add 1 tea boiling water slowly to the mixture while it is beating. 1 sea salad oil, not olive oil, another tricky part. Dribble the oil into the beating mixture, 1 teaspoon at a time, beating well after each addition. Soon you will notice that the mixture is beginning to thicken a little. Then you can add the oil a little faster, no more than 2 to 3 tea at a time, beating well after each addition. Keep doing this until all the oil is absorbed into the mixture. Add juice of 1 lemon or 1 tea of bottled lemon juice, mix well. Add 1 tea of vinegar, wine vinegar will give you pink mayonnaise, mix well. Then taste it. It might need a tad more salt, but usually not. Keep in a covered glass jar in the refrigerator. This is excellent on any kind of fish. I like skinless and boneless sardines with crackers or the sandwich my mom always fixed. Spread mayonnaise on whole wheat bread, mash the sardines to cover the whole slice, a little salt and a little pepper and a squeeze of lemon juice, sometimes with lettuce on top, or not. Finish with the other slice of bread liberally coated with mayonnaise, served with a couple of sweet pickles on the side. Yum! I usually invited my parents over for dinner once a week. Dad had a sweet tooth, so I had dessert. I discovered a chocolate cake recipe that he really liked and used this same cake recipe for years. Box cakes in those days were not that good, but today's packaged cakes are much better. Original recipes for cake and frosting were from Better Homes and Gardens cookbook, but I have tweaked them. Dad's special chocolate cake ingredients. Half C shortening. 1 and 3 quarters C sifted flour. 1 and a half C sugar. 1 teaspoon baking powder. 1 teaspoon salt. Half baking soda. 1 C milk. 2 eggs. 2 1-ounce squares melted unsweetened chocolate. 1 teaspoon red food coloring. Directions. Preheat oven, 350 degrees. Combine all dry ingredients in a separate bowl. Stir shortening just to soften, sift in dry ingredients. Add 2/3 C milk, mix until all flour mixture is dampened. Beat 2 minutes. Add remaining 1/3 C milk, eggs, melted chocolate and food coloring. Beat vigorously for 2 minutes. Pour into prepared 8 by 1.5 inch cake pans. I like baker's choice. Bake 30-35 minutes. Cool completely prior to frosting. Mocha chocolate frosting. Ingredients: 6 tea cocoa, 6 tea hot coffee, 6 tea butter, 1 teaspoon vanilla, 3 C sifter confectioner's sugar. Directions: combine cocoa and hot coffee, add butter and vanilla and beat until smooth. Add sugar gradually until frosting is of spreading consistency. Enough frosting for layer cake tops and sides. I usually made a little extra for between the layers also.